and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we've got a special show for you today. We're going to get some harvest updates from around the country. We would love to hear from you if you want to call in. Even if you don't want to speak on the radio, at least call in and talk to our screeners. Actually, our sister Janelle is sitting behind the glass with us today, so she will most likely answer your phone call if you'd love to call in and just tell us what is going on your farm, how yields are coming out, how things look. I'd also kind of be interested if anybody's got any yield data, actual yield data on beans that were cupped from dicamba. I do, and the beans turned out great. I think they may be the best beans on our farm. We will find out when we get done. We're only, you know, maybe 20% into our soybean harvest. Yields are decent. White mold hurt us pretty bad. Cup beans, I don't know. The dicamba may have helped us, Darren.
All right. Now you're going to create a firestorm.
That was the whole point.
There's certainly some spots out there where it hurt yield. But, yeah, on our
farm,
we had...
We didn't have physical drift.
We had a little tank contamination on one spray batch this year, and it turned out okay for us. So that's good. I feel good about that. But honestly, Brian, I was out doing pod counts much earlier this season, and it looked fine. You know, and you look at the pods, we didn't see it, but we did see cup leaves for a long time through the season. Now, there's certainly a lot more severe cases out there, and I'm not trying to downplay that whatsoever. Like Brian said, we'd love to hear your harvest results from your farm on the good things and the bad things, too.
Yeah, so the first full field we did was 70. Last year, our farm average was 70. We're not going to average 70 this year. I pretty well know that. We have too many spots of white mold, spots that should be good. And we've talked about this a little bit lately. It's my fault. I screwed up. We should have sprayed late. We didn't spray late. We should have sprayed at R5. It's not like it's that difficult or that expensive. I wasn't thinking. I just figured, well, we'd been dry. We'd had 1.2 inches of rain in 7 weeks. And I thought, there's no chance of white mold. But then we had 3 weeks in August of cold and wet, where highs were maybe 70 degrees. And it was raining almost every other day. We had time to get the spraying in there. I mean, it's not like we couldn't have done it. But that would have made a big difference because we've done a little bit of Contans in the past. We this year sprayed fungicide twice already on soybeans. And so the average guy, too, and kind of like me, is going to think, well, I sprayed twice already. I should be good. I used a little bit of Domark the first time. I used some Domark and Topsin the second time. So I've used some products that would have decent activity on white mold. But the problem is we didn't spray late enough, and you know, we certainly could have used the best product. We could have used Endura. That costs a crazy amount of money for a soybean farmer. But we've already seen yields go down 50 bushels an acre. Well, at 50, I can afford an awful lot of stuff. So even at $8 beans, that's $400 an acre. Even if I had to spend 40, so what? I would have gained $360 by doing it. Now, granted, it's in spots of fields. So would I have spot treated or would I have done everything? That's a good question.
I'll say it's $15 more than other alternatives out there per acre. If you told somebody, hey, you need to spend $15 more on nitrogen next year on your corn, I don't think many guys would bat an eye. Okay, yep, I'll do it. If that's what I need to do, I'll do it. But $15 more on a fungicide, whoo, I don't know if I can do that. When you look at what kind of yield you're protecting, wow, for 3 bushels of beans, you can get the best protection out there is.
Yeah, but part of the thing, Darren, is the fungicide's going to have no benefit for next year. I mean, well, I shouldn't really say that because now that there is white mold, the sclerotia are going to be in the soil. So, you know, technically, yes, I suppose there is benefit for next year. But with nitrogen, especially in our heavy soils with the very little rain that we have, if we put extra nitrogen out, there's going to be some of that left for next year. Fungicide, you know, most people look at it as, well, it's a one-time shot. Either it works or it doesn't, done. And I get that. And it's hard to pull the trigger, too, when you don't know. You don't know if you're going to have that white mold. Just like me, I thought, oh, we're in good shape. We've been dry for a long time. So anyway, so far, that's really the only disappointing thing. Well, other than the fact that we're only 20% into soybean harvest, and here it is October 11th. I was expecting we'd be half done with corn already, and beans would have been done last week sometime. So yeah, that's just the way it goes. We've been really wet.
All right, so yesterday we were talking about corn and some of the things to look for in corn and things to further investigate with stalks and roots and everything else. Today I want to talk about soybeans. So I went out to a field today that supposedly had white mold in it. You know, wow, what did I do wrong in this field? I got some white mold. I thought I did things right. So I get out and I take a look, and yep, beans were kind of laying down and they were dark colored, and it looked kind of like a white mold area coming from the road. However, when I got out in it, guess what? I couldn't find white mold at all. None. Not any. I didn't find a single plant with white mold in that field. What did I find? Anthracnose, just terrible. Pod and stem blight, even the pod form of pod and stem blight, you know, found all kinds of stuff. And it's like, whoa, thought it was white mold out here.
Nope, was that one of our fields or somebody else's?
It was actually a test plot that had a bunch of different varieties in it. And they said, yield data won't be any good because we're going to have white mold out there. Well, nope, wasn't white mold. And it was very specific to the variety too, which was quite interesting that some varieties had more time.
Are you dancing around this? Was it our stuff or what?
It was a different trait. And I don't want to talk about that necessarily just yet.
So it was on our ground?
Yeah, it was technically on our ground.
Okay, yep. But it was test plot area that wasn't sprayed with fungicide, or what was the deal?
It was not sprayed with fungicide.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It was managed for white mold early, but it wasn't sprayed, like you were talking about, wasn't sprayed with fungicide late. And we saw anthracnose come in late. And it was devastating what it did to some stands out in a couple of the varieties. And I think some of it may have been maturity, but some of it could be genetic too. So I'm taking some notes on that as far as which varieties we saw more of that into.
Well, since you bring that up, I probably better look closer because I know I'm going out later today to look at some of our fields. And I mean, everybody's been telling me it's white mold. I haven't investigated myself.
Well, there is white mold out there too in some of the fields. There's no doubt about it. A lot of times in the low ground, that kind of thing too.
Yeah.
This one was not. This was kind of on a hillside, which is why I was investigating. I'm like, really? White mold up on that hill? That seems kind of weird. But
yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take harvest updates from around the country today. We'd love to hear how things are going on your farm. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Weeds have grown tough, especially glyphosate-resistant Palmer pigweed and mare's tail, but Sharpen herbicide is tougher. Powered by Kixor herbicide technology and offering an additional site of action, Sharpen herbicide drives burn down 3 to 5 times faster than 2,4-D or glyphosate. Part of the BASF Advanced Weed Control System, Sharpen herbicide offers not only unmatched pre-plant interval flexibility, but also cleaner fields and improved operational efficiency. To learn more, visit advancedweedcontrol.basf.us. Always read and follow label directions.
In today's market, growers deserve products that bring true, measurable value to their farm. My name is Wade Barnes, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Farmer's Edge. My passion has been to build a company that makes great products that creates value for farmers. When value is clear, decisions become easy. At Farmer's Edge, we believe the only way to understand value is to experience it yourself. I want to give every farmer the opportunity to experience the value of their data. Try our integrated data solution with no commitments till May 1st, 2018. Farmer's Edge will install cam plugs in every piece of equipment and weather stations on every farm. We'll give you access to our farm management platform, Farm Command. Experience the value of having accurate, field-centric data at your fingertips. I know we can make a difference on your farm. Your data is your asset. Own it and use it. Visit us at smartfarmers.com and sign up today. That's smartfarmers.com.
3, 2, 1, we are go.
Introducing Irrigation Mission Control, Rain Cloud from Rinke.
Looking good.
From almost anywhere with any smart device, access and manage irrigation data, pivot functions, check soil moisture and more, all from a customized dashboard that fits in your pocket.
For better decisions and smarter farming.
Visit myraincloud.com. That's myreincloud.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Taking harvest updates from around the country and around North America, we would love to hear from you. Phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Well, I know one of the busiest guys out there is Wade Barnes with Farmer's Edge. Wade, how's it going today?
Things are going great. How are you?
pretty good. So I assume you're trying to get a lot of soil sampling done out in the fields. How's harvest coming along?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the northern part here, in the northern plains and in Canada, harvest is pretty much getting wrapped up. So I know a fair amount still going on further south, but guys are out soil testing like crazy right now.
All right, so Wade, we have you on the show today because you got a big announcement for us. Can you talk to us about that now?
Yeah, well, we made an announcement this morning. Farmers Edge and Planet have partnered together, and which really provides Farmers Edge with sole distributorship of Planet's Planet Scope satellite constellation. So that's essentially the RapidEye, the Dove, and the Skynet constellation. So what this will give us is essentially near daily satellite imagery just about anywhere in the world.
Wow. So when you start talking daily satellite imagery, I know I'm going to talk to some farmers that I'll mention this to, and they'll go, well, is it really necessary to have daily satellite imagery? What more am I going to learn if I have daily satellite imagery as opposed to weekly satellite imagery? And how would you respond to that?
Well, and they may not be completely wrong. I think the issue is that, you know, 2-3 years ago, we signed up to RapidEye, and it was supposed to be weekly. And a lot of times we only got monthly. And so
right.
I think our view is that daily, you probably don't need daily, but if I can focus on daily, then I'm going to be assured at least getting, you know, 3 or 4 images a week. And I think, you know, if we can match that up and ensure that it's like a second set of eyes on those fields, and we can catch things that are happening, whether it be a disease outbreak or insects or even a misfertilizer application, that the data is there timely enough so that a farmer can actually react to it rather than looking back a month later and saying, man, I've got a big screw up over there, but
right.
Nothing I can do about it now.
Yep, I agree. Okay, so how about the resolution on this? How good is that compared to what we've had in the past?
Well, so Dove is going to be about 3.7 meters, so pretty good. It's not like essentially a drone, but it's good enough to really make strong agronomic decisions and make decisions that are kind of connected to large-scale equipment. So I think the resolution is probably less important compared to the frequency. The frequency is what we were really after.
Yeah, as I sit here and think about this, you mentioned the drone or UAVs. You know, it sounds good in theory. Oh, I'm going to, as a farmer, have a UAV or a drone, and I'm going to go fly my fields. Well, that takes a lot of time, as opposed to this, where just every day I can sit down at my computer and take a quick look at the field that I want to really focus on for that particular day. Can you talk about that and how you feel about comparing satellite versus the potential use of UAVs or drones in agriculture?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, when we had all our struggles about getting the frequency with regular imagery, guys were focused about moving towards drones. And the problem with drones is that, I mean, the logistics to actually make it work in the field, the farmer has to be ultra committed to it. And
right.
Being able to then deal with all the data. So what the Dove constellation is going to give us is the ability so that the farmer gets an alert. He gets sort of touched. He gets reached out to the device, gets poked in the arm and says, hey, look, on your 20 fields, you've got a problem with 4 of them. You should go take a look at that. And so that he doesn't have to plan his day around, you know, flying a drone to see what's wrong. He's getting connected to and being told that something's not right. And then it's directing him right to that spot, which gives him the ability to react to it.
All right, let's talk about that just a little bit more. So at Farmer's Edge, how are you able to do that? And how quickly is the farmer going to get that information? So let's say there is a satellite image that comes in today. What process does it then go through at Farmer's Edge? So you compare that to old maps, I assume, and then send something out, and how quick does that all happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, the goal is to get, you know, the data coming from the satellite, you know, into the platform, the data processed and off to the farmer. We're looking at, you know, 48-hour turnaround to maybe the worst case scenario, 2 to 3 days. And so, you know, and then adding that extra you know, that daily imagery as it's coming down. So you'll probably be reacting to stuff that's going on in the field that might be information that might be 2 or 3 days old. But that considered, comparing that to what was there before, that's, you know, a huge change.
Yeah, and you mentioned data and how you handle the data already, but I just think about some of the weekly stuff I've had in the past. If I start getting stuff every day, that's a lot of data for you to handle. So I assume you've ramped up with computers and servers and everything, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we ran, so we demoed this and we did a pilot. And we were used to not getting data, enough data. So
yep.
When suddenly the daily started to come, we got inundated. And so our guy said, look, this is incredibly addicting and I love it, but I don't need an image every day on every field. You need to build something that can actually alert me to problems. And so that's what we're doing right now. We're building out our platform to be able to handle change detection. So by next spring, farmers are going to be alerted to problems. I mean, if they want to look at every image every day, no problem. But we just don't think – we want to make this easy to use and user-friendly. And we just learned that daily imagery in every field is not going to be user-friendly. We're going to go from not enough to way too much.
Okay, so here's kind of the way I'm looking at the whole thing with satellite imagery, and you can tell me if you have a better idea for how to use it as a farmer. But the way I kind of think about it is – in the fall, like right now, okay, it's harvest and we're going along, we're making these nice yield maps and I can see, ooh boy, I got a bad problem over here. What can I do about it? What should I have done about it? And a lot of times all the data is gone. I mean, all the plants are gone, the bugs are gone, weeds are gone, whatever. So I can't really tell for sure what caused my yield loss. So I kind of look at the satellite imagery as a preview to what my harvest map is going to show me, my yield map. So it kind of gives me the idea on, hey, I need to go look at these spots to figure out what's wrong. Is there a better way to do it? Is there something else I should be looking for?
Well, I think it's both. Like, so now you essentially have the story of why that area didn't yield the way that it should have. You can look back every day throughout the whole life of the crop and identify what period of time when the crop started to go backwards. And you can correlate, maybe it's moisture, or maybe it was a disease outbreak, or maybe it was a fertilizer misapplication. So you can get sort of some perspective on what happened. I think for next spring, the real exciting part is that you're going to get that as you go along. So you're not going to be saying, man, I wonder what happened. You're going to be going through the process of saying, oh my goodness, something is happening and I got to deal with it. So when you look at your yield map, there'll be no problems and you should be able to correct those issues or at least know what was coming.
All right. So we've got about a minute left here, Wade. I guess I'd just like to have you kind of restate your announcement and then just talk about any exclusivity that there is with Farmer's Edge and then how people can get involved with you.
Yeah. So I mean, essentially Farmer's Edge is sole distributorship of the Planet Constellation. We're going to embed that into our solutions platform. So anybody who signed up to a Farmer's Edge product will have access to this type of data. And we'll really be the only folks out there in the market today that will have it. There'll be some existing contracts that will eventually get wound up. But, and our goal is to partner not just directly with the farmers, but work with a lot of their trusted advisors to be able to help them utilize this really cool game-changing technology.
And in terms of cost, what's a farmer looking at roughly?
We're gonna have to increase our cost, but it's gonna be relatively about $1 an acre. So when you look at what you're gonna be able to get compared to what it would cost you, otherwise we think that's real good value.
Yeah, it's an awesome deal. Thanks, Wade.
There are micronutrients throughout the league, Joe, but let's take a look at Micro 500.
Yeah, the synergy of the micronutrients in this guy have raised the bar on the field. Those others are just wannabe micro 500s.
So you think this is the player you'd want on your team?
You bet. Whether it's offense, defense, special teams, micro 500 always has a place on the field.
Okay. You can check out micro 500 stats at agroliquid.com.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass agronomic rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice spring day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it will cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory? With the fast-acting post-emergence broadleaf control of Resource Herbicide. Resource is the ideal partner for glyphosate because it adds speed to your post-herbicide application. Resource quickly takes down problem weeds that glyphosate misses, so you can start fighting back immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including Resource, Cobra Herbicide, and Select Max Herbicide with Inside Technology. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field and visit Valent.com/cover the gap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
With generations of experience and a legacy of excellence in construction, Morton Buildings delivers fully customizable buildings for a variety of purposes.
And it wasn't just, this is what we build and this is what we have. They took our ideas and made our building.
It's a superior building. Of course, the warranty is fantastic, and it's all as a result of Morton's designs.
Don't miss your chance to build Morton. Contact your local Morton Buildings Construction Center or check us out anytime online at mortonbuildings.com.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instant and Enserve maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, taking harvest updates from around the area. We'd love to hear how harvest is going on your farm. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Eric from Northeast Iowa with us. Eric, how's it going today? Are you there, Eric? And let me put him back on hold, see if we can get that fixed here. We have one more shot. Eric, are you online there? Nope, having trouble. All right, let's go to another line here. We got Kelly Krapagon with Case IH, Combine Product Manager. Kelly, I bet you're a busy guy today.
You know, it is harvest season, and every harvest is always unique, and it's always a challenge.
That's for sure. So how is harvest going around the country, and are there any common things that are coming up in terms of equipment operation?
You know, interesting you should ask. Harvest was actually progressing at a pretty good pace up until the last round of rains that came across the Midwest. And in fact, soybean harvest was going along at a pretty good clip. Guys were able to get a lot of acres covered and a lot of beans out. And we had pretty good feedback relative to yields. I mean, low end I've heard has been in the 40s, but I hear a lot of yields that are in, you know, the 55, 60 range and some even beyond that. There are some producers that are actually getting close to finishing their soybeans. But with this round of rain that has come through the last couple of days, they're probably going to be out of the field for a little bit.
You know, you speak about some of the weather things like rain. I know we've had some areas that have had some pretty severe winds, too. What do you recommend for guys when they've got some soybeans that just aren't standing that good? We're hearing some producers around the country saying, man, I've got some soybeans that are, I don't know if they're completely lodged, but they're certainly laying down a little bit in the row. Are there some things you can do with the combine to do a better job picking them up?
Sure. You know, first thing I always recommend to people, especially if you get with a lodge, tangle, or down beans, is slow down and be patient. The single biggest challenge to a producer, you know, you've invested a year's worth of time and resources and effort to produce a crop. And when it comes time to harvest that crop and ultimately pick up your paycheck, you want to make sure you get every bean you can and you put it in the grain tank and harvest it. So things like making sure that your header has been properly adjusted so that you can shave the ground, making sure that your reel is properly set and that you're not running the reel too fast to create any shatter loss. You know, simple things like if the beans are down in a consistent direction, you may even go as far as harvest in the opposite direction, so you're feeding those beans in efficiently and harvesting them well. Even things like what we call reel flaps that we can put on the tines to help sweep material across the cutter bar and give that cutter bar an opportunity to capture the bean in the head rather than run over the top of it per se. So there are a number of things that guys can do, and I always recommend to producers, check your guards, check your sickle sections, make sure that you have got sharp sickles, you've got good guards, and you've got extras so that if you run into a problem, you can repair it and move on efficiently.
You know, carrying some extra parts around is certainly a great idea. There's a lot of little wear points and things that don't cost a lot or take much time to fix, but it's sure nice to have them on hand when you need them. Hey, let's shift gears and talk corn just a little bit. I know in some areas of the country, mm-hmm. corn harvest is already done. On our farm, we haven't even gotten started on corn yet. Have you got any tips from us that guys are sharing about corn harvest this year?
Well, the one thing we're seeing this year is it goes all the way back to planting season. Some of the producers that were able to get in early and get the crop planted saw a pretty quick harvest and a pretty efficient harvest. Other producers, on the other hand, especially if they got rained out in the springtime, we saw planting season drag out over a longer period of time. And ultimately, that means that your corn harvest may be extended over a longer period of time in the fall. So we're seeing a harvest that is somewhat erratic. To your point, some guys are in the field, you know, cruising along at a pretty good clip. Others see a little more erratic harvest windows. Generally speaking, for corn harvest, we really recommend guys spend some time in the off months, inspecting their corn head, you know, the simple things, you know, are the gathering chains worn? Are the idler sprockets worn? Do you need to update either the chain or the sprockets? Carefully check the stock roll knives. Are they sharp and are they well positioned? You know, if you've got dull knives that don't pull the corn stalk down, you just can't harvest as efficiently. And even simple things like your deck plate adjustments, ensuring that the deck plates are carefully centered over the corn row so that the corn stalk is coming in right down the middle of that deck plate opening so the ear snaps off efficiently and you're not pushing the stalk one way or another. Those can all lead to better feeding and ultimately a better corn harvest with less butt shelling or ear loss.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to leave any corn out in the field, and really appreciate the tips here. I've been talking with Kelly Kravig with Case IH. Kelly, thank you so much, and have a safe harvest season.
You bet. Thank you.
We've got Eric with us now in Northeast Iowa. Eric, how's it going?
Not too bad. Can you hear me this time, fellas?
You bet. Now we can. How's harvest going on your farm?
Not too bad, actually. We're about 80% of the way done on the soybeans and just nibbled into the first couple hundred acres of corn here this last week.
All right, so everybody's curious. When you just start getting into the corn, what are you seeing with yields? Is it better than you expected or about what you were thinking?
I would say if you asked me from what I expected a month ago, we're probably 15, 20 bushel better than I would have guesstimated. That being said, last year we came off record-setting year. We kind of had our, you know, we got our hopes set high going into the season. Coming off a record year last year, it may not be as good, but it should be right close.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. How about on the bean side? Or did you guys get hit? There were a lot of guys talking about SDS and white mold over in southeast Minnesota. How about in northeast Iowa?
Not so much on the white mold. Our August and September were fairly dry. That being said, we did get hit pretty hard by more brown stem rot, actually, than the white mold or the SDS this year. Somewhat variety specific, but not entirely.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's one that doesn't get enough press, that's for sure. But brown stem rot definitely popped up in some areas this year.
From Iowa, you would have thought it was white mold. Get out and look at it. Can't find any of the sclerotia or the, I'll call it the mini rat turds out there, but you can definitely, it's definitely a brown stem rot where it is, and you can actually get out and ground truth it.
So you were kind of dry going into this fall. Are conditions still good out with soil conditions, or are you having to fight any wet fields?
We got an inch and a half of rain over the weekend. That soaked up relatively quick. We got another inch and a half, 2 inches last night. Something tells me that's probably not going to soak in nearly as fast. We're going to be in the wet boat just like everybody else is going from here forward. And our forecast the rest of the week looks fairly damp as well.
Sure, sure. So does that mean you're going to be switched over to corn for a while, waiting for things to dry out for the rest of those beans?
I would say we're going to be doing corn for the immediate future. We did sneak a few beans in yesterday, quick before the rain, you know, 13.5, 14% moisture range. But yeah, that being said, a wet forecast coming up, probably corn head goes back on the machine until further notice.
Yep, yep. So what moisture are you harvesting corn at right now?
Some 98 hard one-day corn, which is considered somewhat on the early side of the range for our area. That's coming out around 20 to 23%.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Yeah, so I would imagine you aren't seeing much for loss then at all.
No, field conditions, I mean, yeah, at 20-23%, runs through the machine nice, limited head shelling, you know, runs through the dryer relatively easy, nice moisture to harvest grain at. Fuller season corn, 25-28% hand shelled, yeah, that could use, you know, some dry weather if possible.
You bet. Well, we're all praying for that. Well, Eric, thank you so much. Really appreciate the harvest update, and stay safe this harvest season.
Take it easy. Thanks.
We'd love to hear your harvest update as well. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us a comment or a picture at radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
Want to increase yields in soybeans and dry beans? Research shows that Contan's fungicide followed by a foliar fungicide will improve yields by minimizing risk of white mold. Get a head start this year and treat your crop with Contan's fungicide from Sipcam Rotam. Reduce the sclerotia in your soil and minimize your risk for white mold. For more information, visit sipcamrotam.com.
This AgroLiquid line is something special. A lot of really impressive playmakers. Take a look at Sure K. This guy is an enigma.
But wrap your head around the exceptionally high plant response when compared to conventional potassium sources, the research-proven plant availability, plus flexible application options and mixing capabilities.
Really stellar performance stats. Sure K is a true standout, and that's a winning goal on any field.
What makes Phytogen brand varieties flat out better in West Texas? We ask growers like Lance Williams how Phytogen is helping his cotton farm thrive.
We grow cotton in the Texas Panhandle for limited water use. It's a good fit for us with the rotation to corn and dry land. It's the best money-making crop we've got. Phytogen has allowed us to expand our cotton acres and grow because of new herbicide tolerances, and we are able to grow more cotton efficiently and effectively. Phytogen seed has taken us to the next level with fiber quality. We've seen loan values that we've never seen before with it, and our yields are good as well. Phytogen varieties have early season vigor like no other. They will come up in cool, wet soils and also have great storm tolerance in the fall. Bottom line, we make more money with Phytogen seed. That's how it's flat out better for us.
Lance Williams is thriving, and with Phytogen brand varieties, so can you. And now Enlist Duo Herbicide is registered for use on Phytogen cottonseed with the Enlist cotton trait. Visit Phytogen.com to find your local Phytogen representative and learn more.
Increase your yield potential by putting the power of nature to work. Quick Roots Microbial Seed Inoculant helps improve the availability and uptake of key nutrients like N, P, and K, which are critical for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology is available for a variety of crops in an easy-to-apply formulation. Simply mix it into your dry planter box and your seeds will be covered. Learn more at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
Thank you for your harvest updates on today's Ag PhD radio program. Our phone lines are open right now at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got John on with us now in Illinois. John, how's it going today?
Real good. Got about 2 inches of rain last night. First rain we've had in over 2 months.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you guys were so dry. It was just crazy. I couldn't believe that central Illinois was as dry as it was when I was there last month. All right. So what do you think about the soybeans? You still going to have decent beans? Normally that late rain helps beans, but this is a little bit too late.
We probably could have looked at another 6-8 bushel. That's been what happens generally when you get the good August rain. It puts on some more growth on top. And you end up with about that many more beans. We didn't get that, but they're still running good. All my beans were on long-term corn ground, like 15, 20 years worth of corn is where I put all my beans this year, and they're doing exceptional. Really very happy with those. We took out a 10-variety plot yesterday. There was two of them at 84, 85, and the rest of them were 76 and above.
Wow. Yeah, that's fun.
Even without an August rain, it worked well.
Yeah, I think it was right along the highway, wasn't it? I came north when I left. We had a meeting out in Princeton, and I drove right past where you had a test plot out in the field. I just poked my head in there a little bit, and man, you had some growth. I'd say those beans easily were chest high on me. How did they turn out? Yeah. They stand well for you?
They did, most of them. There was no trouble harvesting on them. You just had to use a reel a little bit on a couple of varieties, but that actually can help them feed better. They kind of pull each other in under the auger versus a perfectly standing soldier. You got to kind of toss them under with the reel, but these kind of, with a little bit of tangle to them, I actually kind of like harvesting them. Nothing was down. I didn't have to pick anything up, just feed them a little more gently. So it can be actually be a plus to have a little bit of tangle to them.
Yep. Have you gotten into any corn yet, John?
No, we haven't, but by having all my beans out on that type of ground, it left just good corn acres for corn. I didn't have any trouble farms to put corn on, and it's looking awfully good. It filled. We had great fill, and there was no tip back. We got most of the years are pushing out the end of the, as far as doing kernel counts and trying to get a yield, I've never had any luck with that, but it's going to be good corn.
See, I'm looking over at my brother right now because he's the guesser on our farm. He's always guessing what yields are, and he prides himself that he gets pretty close. Are you hearing some numbers out of your neighbors that sound realistic, not the coffee shop kind of dramatically high numbers?
There are some good numbers coming out, 230s on some good farms. If it got in that April 24th planting period, we only had about a 3 to 4 day window of optimum planting, and then it was more middle of May and then end of May. So if you got it in that first round, there's some good corn coming out. It's maybe a little down from last year, but last year was exceptional. Everything grew last year well.
Yeah, that planting date's really critical. We had kind of the same thing. We got in a little bit, I think around April 17th and April 24th. We had a little tiny window, and then, yeah, it was a while before it was good again. And I'm really curious as we get into that to see how big a difference planting date made on our farm this year, because it's sure been way ahead the stuff that got planted early. Well, John, thank you so much. Really appreciate hearing from you today, and good luck here with the rest of harvest.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Got Tom with us in Georgia right now. Tom, how are you doing?
Just fine. How about y'all today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. What's happening on your farm now?
Well, we finished harvest on corn really about the first part of September, and that was all pretty decent. We met our yield goals, exceeded it a little bit, around 240 or thereabouts. So that was excellent for us, because we weren't looking for about 225.
Awesome.
Soybeans, we have not started any harvest on beans. We're not growing any group fives, just sixes and sevens. They look decent at this point in time. We are harvesting peanuts, and the peanuts have been really very, very good at this point in time. We're approximately a third through, and we've had good yields and good weights and good grades. I can't complain there.
Cotton-wise,
just beginning on cotton, so we really don't know where we're at on cotton at this point. Just beginning harvesting pecans, so we really don't have any numbers yet on the pecans, but we're beginning that harvest.
Wow,
so things are moving along pretty well.
Yeah, that's a lot of crops, Tommy. You got a lot of stuff going on. So how big is this harvest window? When will you finish up harvesting if everything goes well weather-wise?
First week in December.
Okay.
Cotton's usually the last thing to come out, and we certainly like to be through the first week in December, but sometimes it's Christmas.
You know, it's funny because
we're way south, so, you know, we've got a long season.
Yeah, guys up here in the north, we say, man, I wish we had a longer growing season. We could get so much more done. But then you think about it, gosh, we'd be working till Christmas every year for sure. And normally we're done in the fields with everything by Thanksgiving. And so, be careful what you wish for, I guess.
Yes. Well, that's right. It's just, it's different down here, but that's okay. We can do things y'all can't do, you know. We enjoy growing our peanuts, and they've done well for us. We encourage folks to eat a lot of peanuts.
That's a good little plug. I appreciate that, Tom. All right, how about the pecans? Now, how do you harvest that? Is it a shaker that you put on a tree, or what do you do?
Yes, what we do is we maintain the orchard floor, so it's reasonably clean. We have very short grass out there on that. We go and we shake the trees with a special machine that actually grabs the tree, and it violently shakes it, because it's a counterweight that rotates around, and that shakes the nuts off. And around each tire you have a sweeper, and so when you move it, it's sweeping the nuts away. Then you come back in with a blower, and then you blow the nuts away from the trunk of the tree, and then you come in with a rake that's a specially designed rake to actually put those in a windrow. And then we have a machine that comes back in and actually picks those windrows up and blows out some of the trash and takes those to the cleaner. And then we clean those up and send them on to the shellers.
Excellent. Now, when we're harvesting corn or soybeans, we're looking at the moisture content in the seed. Is it the same thing with pecans?
Oh, yes. We have to. We can harvest them wet. We do harvest them, you know, with some moisture in them. But we put them on the dryers and dry them down to our specified level and go from there. So, yes, they can be too wet, especially stuff that we're trying to export. You've got to get it pretty dry, you know, 8% or thereabouts.
Okay. So how'd your pecan trees hold up through the hurricane that went through this year? Was that a big problem in your area, or just more heavy rains?
What we had is last October, we had the major damage. We had about 3% of the trees were destroyed. And this October, when this storm came through, we had less than 1% damage. So we were very fortunate where we're at.
some of our friends that are 100 miles to the west of us, they did not fare quite as well. But then they didn't have last October's storm. So we cleaned out all our junk trees last October a year ago. And so we're not terribly hurt here in the eastern part of the state, but the southwestern part of the state has had a tremendous amount of damage, probably in excess of 10%, something along those lines is what I've been told by some of my friends down that way.
Yep, well, we certainly keep those folks in our prayers. That's no fun when you get bad weather that comes through, especially when you're talking about a tree that lives for a long time. You sure hate to lose those. Well, Tom, thank you so much. Yeah. Sounds like you got a lot of harvest going on. Good luck and stay safe.
Thank you. Y'all take care. Okay.
Getting your harvest updates today on Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us with a question or a picture or a comment. Our email box is open, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to your corn, you can't cut corners on weed control. But what if you could get a great foundational control and a great value? Now you can with Balance Flex pre-emergence herbicide and its new lower price. Balance Flex provides a flexible foundation that complements any herbicide program so yields are protected from the start. Talk with your Bayer retailer or visit balanceflex.us/save for a great value on early season weed control. Balance Flex from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
You know our names. Ultrablazer, Surflan, Topson, Manzate, Asail. But do you know us? We are UPI, a worldwide leader in crop protection. And we are quietly leading the way. We are developing and improving products that meet your ever-changing needs. Today, we offer more than 90 herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, and fumigants that provide the widest range of protection in agricultural, aquatics, turf, ornamental, and pest control markets. And we're building for the future, too. In fact, we've built 29 manufacturing facilities worldwide to ensure you always have the products you need. At UPI, we spend our time thinking about the things you think about, protecting your livelihood and reaping a bountiful crop. So let's get to know each other. Visit us at upi-usa.com today.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from Hypro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
On Ag PhD, we've been talking about agronomy for nearly 20 years now. The number one question besides agronomy we get each week is for help on grain marketing. That's why we've created Grain PhD. No, we're not able to tell you exactly when to hit the high in the market, but we will give you the education you need to feel just as knowledgeable about your grain decisions as you do your agronomy ones. Grain PhD is the best place to go for all your risk management and cash marketing needs. Just go to grainphd.com or call 844-GRAIN-01.
Don't let resistant weeds cause problems in your corn. Partner up with a tank mix of Impact Herbicide and Roundup WeatherMax or PowerMax Herbicide. Now that's an all-star team for overall control of resistant weeds, including water hemp, kochia, Palmer amaranth, and mare's tail. And because Impact Herbicide is the only post-emergence partner in the Roundup Ready Plus corn program, that's a team that earns you an incentive of up to $3.50 per acre. Get the resistant weed control program that pays. Ask your AmVac sales rep about Impact Herbicide. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You are listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call into the show, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's exactly what Michael did down in Kansas. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Doing great.
So what's happening right now on your farm?
For the first time in a week, I'm back in the saddle driving my combine, harvesting soybeans.
So too much rain, I assume?
Yeah, we had 3.5 inches of rain. Most of it fell Friday night, and a little bit of showers and cloudiness afterwards. So all I can say is we were having trouble with beans being too green before then, but that problem is gone right now. It's just watching out for the mud holes.
Yep, same exact thing for us. So tell us about yields. How's everything turning out?
Pretty much what we call a good average for us in northern Kansas, mid-30s to mid-40s. It's kind of a disappointment in a way. Last year we had a record yield, so it's a bit of a letdown to get back to normal, but I'll learn to live with it.
So what ended up hurting beans this year, or put it another way, what helped so much last year why you had such great yields?
It was really last year. It was a cool, wet August. This year, it was a cool, extraordinarily dry July and August. Well, there was heat in July, but it was really just drier weather, more normal Kansas stuff, I guess is what you call it.
Sure. So, how about like weed control, diseases, bugs? Do you have any of those issues?
Didn't have a lot. It's much less bugs than usual. For the weeds, I was using dicamba beans this year and got very good control with that. The biggest thing I'm seeing right now is I will hopefully get done with bean harvest in 3 days or 4 days and go right to planting wheat into it. And I have got all kinds of 2-inch tall Palmer amaranths that are blooming or going to seed. They're just tall enough to slide underneath the cutter bar. And I'm afraid there's not going to be much I can do about them.
So 2 inches tall, and they're still going to seed.
2 inches tall, yeah, about 1.5 inches off the ground. You've got a couple true leaves and a little head that's about 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch long, and the darn little suckers are putting out seeds, yeah, or blooming and whatever else. Yeah, it is. You can go out and stomp on them, but eventually you're going to get tired of that.
So can I ask you on wheat, do you normally have much problem with Palmer pigweed?
It isn't usually a problem with growing it. As a matter of fact, wheat's a good way to clean it up.
Right.
My program has been, I prefer to go 2 years of wheat, but right now I can't feel like I afford it. 2 years of wheat and be sure to use some paraquat somewhere in there cleaning up the wheat stubble. And it doesn't work worth a darn on shatter cane or velvet leaf, but boy, it sure cleans up the pigweeds.
Yes, yep, absolutely. Yeah, we have a lot of guys that will use that paraquat. Otherwise, Sharpen has been really popular here, too. It's a little bit more money, but it does give you some residual. So, yeah, at least you have a few options there.
Yeah, and the paraquat seems to be more effective than Sharpen here, and I don't want to overuse that technology.
Right, yep. Okay, so how about on the corn side of things? Have you done some corn yet?
No, I haven't. Again, the corn was hurt by dry weather. I'm not expecting anything, an average crop or below, somewhere in the 100 bushels or less range, which for us is okay, but kind of sad because you don't make any money on it. We have grain sorghum here, or milo, whichever you want to call it. It looks like an extraordinarily good crop. Mm-hmm. The corn I have not harvested because the higher priority is getting these beans in the bin. They're what makes me money.
Yep, I feel the same way. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot for the phone call today, and best of luck to you as you keep working on harvest down there.
Okay, thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
You bet, thanks. All right, well, it is time now for the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, first question comes from Frankie in Georgia, I believe. Frankie said, I got a soil test back from Midwest Labs, and I should have paid more attention in chemistry class. My question is, what do I do now? I'm trying to grow hay, and I can see the pH is really low, but what about some of the other nutrients on the test?
Well, I'll tell you what, Frankie, I didn't learn this kind of stuff in chemistry class either. This is something that not a lot of people teach. We do have Ag PhD soils clinics, and we talk about this quite often here on the show and on TV. So pH, what I'm looking at here is I see a lot of mid-5s, and you said hay, Darren. What kind of hay?
Didn't say.
Oh, okay. If it's alfalfa hay, you're way low. If it's grass hay, it's not horrific, but still, you got to get that pH up. So the best money spent is most likely going to be on lime. And as he said, he already realizes that. One of our challenges here is it's light soil. 4 to 5 cation exchange capacity. So in other words, we would call that very light soil. The organic matter, surprisingly, is pretty decent for that light of soil. The organic matter is around 3%. So obviously, he's been doing some things right here over time. I guess as I look at it, though, I see phosphorus is low. His potassium is actually pretty good. Magnesium is pretty good. I mean, he's got a lot of things on here that are pretty decent. Sulfur, not too bad. But zinc, you're a little on the low side. Manganese, low. Iron, a little bit low. Copper, low. Boron, really low. Boron worries me a lot in lighter soils. That's something that has to be applied at least once a year. And many times, it's multiple times during the year on that really light soil because boron is leachable, just like nitrate and sulfate are leachables. So we got to keep that in mind. But yes, there are several additional things that you're going to need. The best news, though, again, you know, your organic matter is not too bad. Your potassium is in really good shape for the most part, not in every single test, but for the most part. It's just a lot of the other things. Absolutely got to get those taken care of.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got one from Brock, and he said, I'm getting ready to start building an actual nutrient management plan for our farm that we're going to provide to NRCS in Ohio. We use no manure, just commercial fertilizer. We're grid soil sampling using variable rate technology to apply it. My question is, if you use these types of plans, what all do you include in your plan?
And for what kind of plan was it again?
Well, I said he's turning it into NRCS.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know what all they require right now. We don't do any of that. And we have plenty of opportunities too. We do a little bit of stuff where I've got a riparian area, for example, a couple three different riparian areas. We're not asking for any money on that. I was just driving past. I was showing a guy some of our farm today, and I said we own two of these watershed dams to help prevent flooding on the Big Sioux River, a river that we farm right next to. I mean, we've probably got a grand total of 40 acres tied up between those two dams. Well, what's that worth? In today's market, it's $10,000 an acre. That's $400,000 that are tied up because of that. You know, if I figure these other riparian areas, we probably have at least $500,000 worth of stuff tied up. I'm not asking for any government money, and I'm not saying it's wrong to do that. If you want to do that, go ahead. It's just I don't know what their rules are, and that's the reason why, because we've chosen not to get involved with the government on that side of things, but you certainly can. They have those programs out there. All I can tell you is the more details you have on what your ground is and what your management practices are going to be, most likely the happier they're going to be. But you got to look at what their specific requirements are for the exact program you're getting into in your area.
All right, got one from Ken. He said, I want to start off by saying I don't have a farm, but I do enjoy hearing about the ag industry and respect all that farmers do. I've got a question regarding liquid versus solid manure. Would there be much difference in the manure analysis regarding the nutrients? And Ken's up in Ontario, Canada. Hey, thanks for the question, Ken. We really appreciate it. So when you look at liquid manure versus solid manure, obviously you've got that water component in the liquid. So it really depends on how much water is in that manure and if there's been any kind of processing at all of sorting out solids and that kind of thing. Oftentimes we see some types of manure being a lot more concentrated than others. So what we would suggest is sending in a sample of that manure and getting an analysis done. That way you know how many nutrients are in, say, a gallon in the liquid or in a pound in the manure. So if you had that, then you could really compare what there would be for differences. Yeah, there's certainly going to be a difference in analysis between liquid and dry. And then how are you going to get those applied, too? If it's something where you're putting it on top of grass, for example, wow, that's kind of a challenge. If it's something that you can inject down deep, that manure, liquid manure is great to work with. With the solid manure, when we put it out on the farm, we're tilling it in. So just depends on how you're going to use the stuff, but I'd get an analysis done on each. That way you know exactly what the differences are and what the nutrient contents are. Hey, thanks a lot, Ken. Really appreciate the question. Had fun today hearing about harvest going on around the country. On our farm, we're just getting going here, but we're pretty excited because that's a fun time of year for us. So we'd love to hear from you throughout harvest season with updates from your farm. You can send them in to radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.